Well, welcome to the show. Last week we saw the closing of Belmont. We saw the retirement of trainer Mike Cushing. And this week we move on to beautiful Saratoga and the opening of Del Mar in sunny California. As you know, each week we try to update our listeners on things that transpire in the racing world and bring new information to all of our listeners. I certainly hope you'll tell people how much fun we have here and ask people to join us and listen to our replays. Most nights I'm joined by my good guest, Mike Monroe, but tonight he's a little bit late, and we're hoping to hear from some people as we move along. Our phones will be open if anybody would like to give us a call to talk about beautiful Saratoga, talk about Del Mar and things of that nature. It's a big time of excitement. Our telephone number is 646-716-4442. Last week, we were so happy to have a beautiful lineup of guests. We had jockey Manny Franco, their owner Jerry Crawford, and, of course, we had the aforementioned Mike Cushing, who retired after 42 years of training. With that, I'm going to patch in my man, Mike Monroe. Good afternoon, Mike. Thanks for joining.
Hey, Bill. How are you today?
Fine, thanks. I managed to make it up here to beautiful Saratoga, and we're on a little bit early tonight because we have some events to go to tonight, and I can attest that the track looks fine and as happy as always.
That's great news. That's great news. Hopefully the weather will be crystal clear for the weekend, and it'll be a successful opening start to what should be an awesome meet.
Well, you know, each year up here, for those people who are familiar with Saratoga, you know how the weather changes on a dime. And those who don't know, it's subject to big rainstorms, and you really have to kind of pay attention to what the weather's like and when it changes. But for now, it seems like we're looking at a beautiful opening day. Before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about last week. We highlighted Mike Cushing last week and his retirement. Unfortunately, the storybook ending of going out with a winner didn't happen. Did you happen to see that race where he ran his last starter?
I did, Bill, and you know, unfortunately, the horse had a little bit of trouble in the stretch. You know, from the outside, you know, with the outside post and outside trip. But you know, that's you just can't. You know, just because Mike didn't win, you can't say that he didn't go out without having a great career. Unfortunately, he didn't go out, you know, with a win, but what a great career he had. I mean, you know, the guy's been 25%. Throughout the year, most years of his training career. I mean, not many people could say that. Awesome horseman, great background, and, you know, I was so glad that he came on the show.
Yeah, no, it was great. We were happy to have him on, and, you know, it was just another example of how many things can possibly go wrong. You know, with the horse broke to the outside. Jose Ortiz did everything he could to get him back into contention, and he had a shot through the stretch and only to be shut off by a horse who I actually thought should have been disqualified, but the stewards thought otherwise. Did you have an opinion on that?
I kind of side with you, Bill, on that. I definitely think that he not only interfered with Mike Cushing's horse, but a couple of horses and caused the effect. But, you know, we've spoken about this many times, you know, with the stewards. It's there's no consistency to some of these inquiries and these foul claims, objections and takedowns. And I really, that's why I really enjoyed your article on it about the centralized, decision-making of an inquiry or a disqualification. You know, they really, you know, and I'm not one of these guys to believe. I don't agree with, you know, well, it didn't have an outcome in the finish of the race. Now, how could you say something like that when you never know what can happen in a horse race?
Right. Well, I mean, it seems like the disqualifications or non-disqualifications, more to the point, have become more and more controversial recently. And I don't really know what the thinking is. Everyone seems to complain, and it seems to be on both sides of the coast. They seem to tolerate now some pretty rough riding, and I guess if history is any guide, they'll tolerate that until somebody gets hurt, and it's too bad they have to wait until somebody gets hurt. But that's always, of course, the big concern, that the horse or rider get injured from some rough riding. But they seem to be very lenient right now, and we'll have to see how that plays out. But anyway, it was. I'm sorry.
The part that really, what you're saying, Bill, but the part that really upsets me is that they won't take a horse down, but 3 days later or 2 days later or the next day they'll watch films, and then 2 days later they'll find the jockey $2,000. Well, if you're finding a jockey $2,000 for something that he did in a race, but you're not disqualifying the horse, I just don't understand that.
Right. It is. It's very difficult to to get some consistency. But that aside, this weekend, big weekend, big week, huge week with Del Mar started yesterday on where the surf meets the turf out in San Diego, and Saratoga, of course, starting tomorrow. And I guess we'll talk a little bit about the respective cards. But the big news, I guess, is Arrogant returning to the races Saturday night.
I guess that's the major draw of the weekend, and all eyes will be on Del Mar on Saturday, Bill. What can't you say about him? He's just an awesome specimen, and the unfortunate thing is, I guess Mike Smith will be in California instead of New York riding in the Coaching Club American Oaks.
Well, I guess Mike Smith has very clearly said he will be wherever Arrogant is, wherever he is on the planet. So I guess that
right.
I guess that doesn't surprise us too much. He will stay with him wherever he goes. It's for all listeners on the East Coast, it'll post time will be about 9:10 on the East Coast. On the West Coast, of course, that'll be 6:10. The race is $300,000. It's a mile and a 16th, which is maybe a little bit short for Arrogant. It's a handicap race, but I think he was pretty favorably weighted at 126 pounds. It seems like he's given some weight to these horses, but it doesn't seem like there's any real challenges in there to him, does it?
Right, and then they said the day of entries, everybody was reluctant to enter when they found that Arrogant was running. You know, nobody really wanted to go up against him. Like you said, it's only $300,000. It's not like it's $1 million or $2 million. You know, where second, third, and fourth would be a nice slice of pie. You know, it's $300,000. So, you know, really second and third aren't really that much, you know?
Right. And I guess, you know, for our listeners who don't know, handicap racing was always meant to do just that, to handicap the best horse. But the best horse carries the most weight, and the idea is through carrying more weight, you might be able to take away a talent advantage that a horse might have. 126 pounds is the high weight. He's giving, you know, up to, I guess, 12 pounds or 11 pounds. He's given up to 11 pounds to some of the horses in this race. But it's nowhere near the imposts that the former greats used to carry in handicap races. I remember Forgo carrying 136 pounds and losing the Suburban to Quiet Little Table, who was carrying 17 pounds less. So I guess those days are over, and Bob Baffert was pretty clear that if he got weighted too high, he would move to he would come to New York and run in New York as opposed to Del Mar. So that's kind of, I guess, handicap racing has taken itself away from what it used to be.
Right, and, you know, Del Mar, they're not going to be that stupid. They don't want to lose the big draw of the crowd to come out and see Arrogant especially to New York, you know, because if he would have came here, even though you get a big crowd in Saratoga on a daily basis, but it would have been a humongous crowd, you know, had Arrogant come east.
Right, so a little bit of forum shopping there and taking away kind of the ability of the racing secretaries to weight up, to heavily weight a favorite. I guess there was a phrase, right? The old timers would say the freight will weight will stop a freight train, meaning that any horse, no matter how talented, if he's giving enough weight to another horse, will find a difficult time to win. So that was always the basis of the handicap races. But it'll be nice to see Arrogant return to the races. Mike Smith, of course, is making the right decision, because anywhere that horse runs, he should be. But that does take him away from Saratoga. So did you get a chance to look at the Saratoga cards for tomorrow and Sunday?
I did, Bill. Very competitive races, you know, very, great opening weekend card. You know, tomorrow, some nice racing, you know, and of course now we get to see the 2-year-olds, and, you know, everybody gives up their 2-year-olds for Saratoga. So hopefully we see some future stars, and maybe as early as tomorrow.
Right. I mean, you know, the races that you do. Well, one thing I was a little disappointed at, and this is, I guess this is just human nature, but I a friend of mine has the old condition books. I'm not sure why he keeps condition books from a year ago, but tomorrow's card is exactly the same as the opening day card on last opening day. It's a little, no real creativity there. It's the exact same list and the exact same the order of races. So it's a little, that's a little disappointing, but
Yeah, I did see that when they sent out the final the races out that were going. It was 1 through 10 and then 1 through 11. So it really wasn't any mixing and matching. You know, it was like you said, it was pretty much to form.
Right. Well, you know, they have 10 races tomorrow. Opening first post is 1 o'clock. Last post is 6:17. So it looks like it's a, you know, 5.5 hour day tomorrow. Opening day, if you're coming out here, it always seems to be people on a Friday afternoon tend to come in a little bit later. They take a half day off from work and come and join us. But the action really picks up on Saturday. And Saturday's an 11 race card in 2 stakes races. You have the Stanford for 2-year-olds and the Diana stakes. That's an 11 race card, which you know is a little bit longer card. Again, first post at 1 p.m., last post around 7 p.m. The Sanford is a 2-year-old race and is most famous for being the only race that Man of War ever lost. Correct?
That's correct. Yep.
Man of War lost to Upset at Saratoga. I guess it was 19. I'm doing this off the top of my head, so I could be wrong, but I think it was 1919, and that was his only loss. So, you know, that's always kind of a race that historical significance, even if it's early in the year. So that's on Saturday afternoon, and you have the usual suspects in the 2-year-old race. You have Todd Pletcher with 2, and Steve Asmussen with 2, and Brian Lynch has 1. Very, very competitive racing. I haven't really handicapped any of it yet. I don't know if you have.
No, not really. I've looked at it, you know, read a couple of the articles on the 2-year-olds, but I haven't really handicapped the race, to be honest with you. But I am looking forward to the Diana, watching the 2 Chad Brown horses do battle. You know, Lady Eli, you know, how could you not root for Lady Eli? And and the other horse that was so impressive on Belmont Stakes Day, Antino, which was, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing these two running the Diana. I think the Diana is it's a 6-horse field, but I think it's going to be a great race.
I agree. It's hard to picture a more competitive field or more talented field than that on the grass. It's 1.125 miles on the grass. This is the 10th race on Saturday, so post time around 6:20. As you mentioned, Chad Brown sends out 2. Lady Eli, everyone knows about Lady Eli and her tremendous comeback from double laminitis, which tends to be a fatal disease. The other horse that he runs, Antino, and it's a difficult name to pronounce. You tend to say Antoinette or Antinone, but it's Antino. Apparently, in his last win, her last win, she ran a tremendously fast final quarter, and it's so fast that there is some people who have some skepticism about how fast it really was. I don't know what to think about that. It was an awful impressive race.
Oh, absolutely, and just the way the horse ran, and Javier came up the inside and just gobbled up ground and drew clear. But you know, Saturday's going to be a great card, and I'm really looking forward to. Unfortunately, I'll have to watch it from my TV in Long Island. You know, as you know, I'm still battling those kidney stones that we were talking about the other day, Bill. But the 8th race on Saturday is the named aptly after racetrackers.
Well, thank you for the plug. Yes, that's right. Anyone who's out at Saratoga that day, or certainly anyone who's watching on TV, please, if you're at the track, come down and join us in the winner's circle as we present the trophy to the winning rider. And the race has been generously named after our show, Racetrackers, here by one of our listeners, and they've gone and given us that honor. And we'll be presenting the trophy in the winner's circle, and we always give it to the jockey. I hope if it's one of the trainers who's been on our show, that that they'll come down and receive the take a picture with us. But anyone who's watching that Saturday, the 8th race at Saratoga, which would be a lot of fun.
Which is a very competitive race on paper, too.
I haven't looked at it yet. I know there's a lot of horses in it, and it will be a good, if the weather permits, it'll be an excellent grass race. Just continuing on, you mentioned before you have the Coaching Club American Oaks. Coaching Club American Oaks used to be the final leg of the Philly Triple Crown. It's changed a little bit, but it's a mile and an eighth. It's been a race that's been around for forever. I don't know how many what running this is, but I should be able to find that out. But it's been a staple on the New York Racing Association circuit for almost a century. And Abel Tasman, who is the top 3-year-old filly right now, seems to be the favorite. Now, Mike, that's on Sunday, and I'm showing that Mike Smith is riding that race, that he's coming out for that road, coming east for that race.
That's right. I got my dates confused. That's correct. I just saw that, and I did make a mistake. He is coming to ride Abel Tasman on Sunday.
So it'll be, another reason for him to get arrogant around the racetrack pretty fast, because he probably has to catch a flight and fly the red eye to New York, and I guess he'll fly to Albany, or maybe he'll fly somewhere and come by private jet to New York to be here up for Sunday to try to win the Coaching Club American Oaks. Abel Tasman has turned out to be just a tremendous three-year-old filly. And I have to admit, I wasn't 100% on board with her early on, but her race at Belmont was tremendous.
Oh, it was awesome. It was that great day that Bob Baffert put on a show with Mike Smith. And looking at the race, you know, you got a late in there and a salty in there. But, you know, I think Abel Tasman will be a prohibitive favorite in the Coaching Club American Oaks, especially after the last month's performance that you just noted, Bill.
Yeah, I would assume that she would be. And then, of course, there's racing at Saratoga on Monday. So as if, you know, 33 races in 3 days weren't enough for you, or 30 races in 3 days wasn't enough, you could continue on to Monday. And for the people who are looking to avoid the traffic, Monday is always an actual pretty good day to stick around. And Monday is a nice card with large fields as well.
The stake Monday is a $200,000 caress named after one of my favorite grass horses trained by the late Alan Jerkins.
Really? Okay, wonderful. I haven't gone through that yet. Now, how about your rider? Does he have any mounts on this weekend, or is he coming to Saratoga, or is he staying down south?
No, we'll be in Saratoga. We have a mount on Monday. A couple of our races didn't go for the weekend, you gotta be in it to win it. So you gotta be up there and keep fighting. I hope to get up there soon, but right now, like I said, I'm battling these kidney stones, so I have to get cleared from the doctor before I could go.
Yeah, you had said that. We didn't speak about it. I didn't know how private you wanted to be about that, but suffice it to say, I believe you, it's a painful experience.
Oh, very, very much so. Wound up in the hospital on Monday night, spent most of the night into the early morning hours there, and, if anybody who's had them, they'll know what I'm talking about. If you haven't had them, you're lucky.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. Well, we have an opportunity to have some callers here if we want. 646-716-4442. Mike, one of the things we should speak about maybe is Ben's cat. We lost Ben's cat over the weekend, and that was pretty disappointing and distressing to a number of people.
It seems we were talking about laminitis before, Bill. You know, being such a tough disease to battle back from. But if we look for the last couple of months, we've seen a lot of these good horses that have been stricken with colic, and a lot of them haven't been able to to battle it, and unfortunately they lost their battles with colic, and it's a tough thing. But like you had mentioned, it's tough taking a horse who is used to training every day and retiring them, and it's just a sad story. You know, there was a lot of different opinions on it, but it must have destroyed King Leatherberry, to have this fine, hard enough to retire him, and then to see him lose a bout with colic, that had to be unbearable.
Right. Well, actually, we just had a caller pick up, and I want to say hello. Welcome. You're on Racetrackers.
Oh, hi, Bill. This is Gabe Bentavim from Long Island. How are you?
Hello, Gabe. Thanks for joining us and Mike Monroe. Gabe, you just came in. We were talking about Ben's cat passing away this week after being retired at the age of 11. And Mike and I were talking about how, and I don't know if this is the case, but I do know that sometimes changes in older horses are stressful, and colic seems to be caused by stress, although I don't know if that's the case. But it's just a shame. He was such a hard knocker and a hard trier on the racetrack, and he had a hard-earned retirement, and he didn't get to enjoy it very long.
When did he retire? What age?
He was 11. He just passed away this week. He was retired early in this week.
Oh, he passed away.
Yeah, so we were disappointed about that. But prior to that, we were talking about the Saratoga meet, and Gabe, you and I know each other, and you've been experienced Saratoga goer. Tell us some of the changes you've seen over the years that you've been coming up to Saratoga.
Well, I've been coming up for 43 years since I was 19. The first weekend I was up here, I actually had to sleep in my car the second night for lack of funds. But, the town has changed a lot, a lot in terms of the used to be all local shops and owners. And they've really, obviously everyone sees what's been going on with buildup of hotels and condos and even chain stores, which I think is a shame. I think the town was a lot more charming. But the racetrack, I would say, has not really changed that much. I think the racetrack still has all its charm, and I still love coming here every year.
Well, they've done. You're right. They've done a pretty good job of keeping the infield pristine and the lake and the lake, and they haven't really succumbed to too much commercialism, at least if you're sitting on the front side of the racetrack looking out. I guess in the backyard has become a little more carnival-like, but. You kind of need those amenities as well. Do you remember the few years when they had the infield open?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm trying to remember what years that was, but I think it was the year of Ali Dar and Affirm, that Travers, they had the infield open, and it just didn't work. Mike, were you up there during those years?
I was, Bill. Yep, I was. And like you said, it just didn't work with having the infield open. I've been going every year. I remember as a youngster watching Secretariat up there. But sometimes the track just gets a little overcrowded. So I guess they tried to open up the infield that year, but it just doesn't work. It's just not suited for opening up the infield at Saratoga.
Yeah, and now it's
okay with me. I don't know about you guys, but I'm okay with that.
No, I'm thrilled about it. As I say, anything that leaves it the way it looks when you're looking at the racetrack is the way it should go. I mean, it's even sometimes when I look out there and I see the new tote boards, it kind of surprises me, because in my mind I'm always thinking of the lower green ones that were designed so you can see right over them to make sure you can see the horses running down the backside.
Yeah, and one thing that just came to me while talking is that compared to other venues such as like the Barclays Center, there's very little advertising thrown all over the track, which is nice. Would you agree?
No, I agree. I agree 100%. Yeah, it's not anything that is advertised is all about Saratoga itself, about the racetrack itself, and there's very little intrusion, and it does. For people who haven't been here, as Gabe pointed out, it's modernized now, but you still get a sense of old time charm, and you still get a sense of old world and kind of how timeless this game is. Our friend Pat Cannon, who calls in, does a good job of talking about the history of racing. And anytime you do something 100 and somewhat straight years, there's a certain tradition with it that shouldn't be messed with.
Absolutely. You know, I did want to ask you one question that came to me a couple of weeks ago when at Belmont, when there was an unbelievable track record. I don't even know if they ever rearranged it, but I think it was in a 5.5 furlong race or a 6 furlong race. But I've noticed really, you know, when we used to come up here every year, it seemed like a track record was broken. It doesn't seem to happen much anymore. I'm wondering why that might be.
I don't know, Mike. You know, they say racetracks, not horses, set records, right? So it's mostly a function of how hard or how groomed the racetrack is. I don't know why the racetrack was so fast at Belmont the last few weeks. It seemed to be ridiculously fast, and I don't know if it's a timing change or a change on the grass course itself, whether the grass was cut low or it was lack of rain. But I don't know. I mean, the records on the grass tend to fall more easily than the dirt records. A world record on the dirt courses, I don't know how many I've ever seen. Not many.
Not many at all.
And not many changes over the years either. You know, you just think with the advancing and training and whatnot and conditioning that there would be, you know, an advancement. But it seems like some of the old track records are just still standing, especially here at Saratoga.
Well, you would think, right? It's the improvement of the breed, so you would think that it's constantly running like anything else, moving towards being faster and faster all the time. But you really haven't seen any records fall, and I guess that's many records fall, and I guess that's what makes Secretariat's world record in the Belmont at 1.5 miles so unbelievable. Not only has it not been broken in 34 years, it hasn't even been approached by anybody, right? I mean,
right,
his record in the Belmont's, you know, it's not even close.
Yeah, what was this year's 2:30 and change or something like?
Right, the 30 length difference. You know, it's just from what he ran. Well, I guess when you talk running, right, in human terms, people were of the firm belief in the 1940s and 1950s that no man, no human, could ever run a 4-minute mile. And when Roger Bannister broke that record, people thought it was a bit of a fluke. It would never happen again. And now human runners pretty routinely run a mile in, I don't know, 3:45, 3:46, right? Is that where it is? Somewhere in the 3:40s.
Somewhere in that. Yeah.
I guess you should get faster all the time, you would think. But.
Yep. So.
Well.
Yeah. This year.
Go ahead.
I'm saying this year we might see some track records, I think, because it's been a long time in my visits here. Something's got to come down this year.
Well, one of the records we're going to see, and what I was going to bring up, I don't know if you listened earlier on the show, we're talking about Mike Smith. Mike Smith is riding Arrogate Saturday night and getting on an airplane and coming here by Abel Tasman Sunday afternoon. So he'll be trying to set some records, I guess, as far as air travel in between winning rides and great stakes races. You know, I guess the toughest part of his trip may be getting from Albany to Saratoga as opposed to his two rides. But yeah, just a tremendous amount of excitement. Well, we're going to have
it is amazing, you know.
I'm sorry, Gabe. Gabe, did I lose you?
Oh, I'm here.
Okay.
I was just saying, amazing the physicality of this sport and how these jockeys are doing it at their age is just incredible.
It's just so demanding. And Mike, you know, Mike is a jockey's agent. Mike, you know that the injuries that you hear about, of course, are a big deal, but there are small nagging injuries, nagging soreness that they encounter all the time, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, day to day, you know, like I said, a lot of times, you know, these horses are like infants. You know, you have to treat them with hand gloves. You know, and they have a habit of hurting themselves in the stalls or coming off the track or, you know, just doing something, you know, childish or stupid sometimes. You know, it could change from hour to hour.
Right. I mean, even this morning, I guess in the gate this morning, our friend Rajiv Miraj had a problem with Sparty 8, I think, wheeled out of the gate. It was a scary moment for him, but he managed to put him back together and complete the work. It just shows how athletic these riders really are.
Oh, absolutely. They're the best conditioned athletes in the world. They day in and day out, managing their weight, you know, keeping fit, you know, every time they go out there. Like I said, it's the only profession, Bill and Gabe, where the ambulance follows them 9 times or 10 times or 11 times around the racetrack.
Yeah, right.
That's right.
Mike, do you think that that, you know, sometimes when jockeys go into short slumps, that it is due to nagging injuries that they have, sort of like, you know, other athletes we're familiar with, tennis players and golfers? And
great question, Gabe. You know, it could be so many things. It can be what you just pointed out. Maybe something's bothering the rider, a shoulder injury, a hand injury, you know, nothing to keep them out, but, you know, that they're riding, you know, with a little soreness, or, you know, not 100%. It could just be that they're not getting on the right horses, you know, getting bad trips, you know, getting in trouble in races, or agents go into slums too. You know, the agent putting them on, you know, having two horses in a race to ride, and sometimes you go together and you and the jock talk about it in the morning and you pick the wrong horse. I mean, it happens a lot. There's a lot of things behind the scenes that people really don't realize what can go on in the average day, you know, of a jockey and a racehorse. But that's a great question. You know, There's a lot of different circumstances. Mine is, though, I believe in slumps. You know, either I'm in a slump or the jock's in a slump. We're in a slump together, and then, you know, you get that one win, you get a little confidence under you, and you go on a little bit of a roll. You know, you'll see that. You know, throughout the trend of this meet, you'll see some jocks that didn't get off too good. You know, some jocks just get hot right out of the gate. You know, some are riding, you know, in the middle of the pack. But, you know, that's a great question. It really is a great question. And if you look this year from top to bottom, you probably have the best jockey colony by far that they've ever had in Saratoga. I mean, you can look through that room and you got, you know, in addition to Paco Lopez coming here now, Joe Bravo coming here full time now. You know, you got Robbie Alvarado coming in, you know, Santana. I mean, you just go down that line. I mean, you know, and then you got the Ortizes here, you got Johnny, you got Rosario. I mean, you know, if it's a six horse field, you know, you got 25 jocks in that room that anybody would want, you know, anywhere else as a first call rider. It's going to be a very, very contentious meet, trainer wise, jockey wise, you know, horse wise. It's going to be a great meet.
Yeah, I think that's great for racing, because there are sometimes, over the years, I recall when one or two jockeys were so dominant that you almost couldn't, you know, play off of them. So that's great news that it's going to be that competitive.
Oh, it's
yes.
Like,
speaking of which, I'm sorry, Mike. Speaking of which, we have our guest James Bond standing by. We want to bring to him, but we can get to him right away. But Gabe, just to finish up on that point, and Gabe, feel free to stay on or drop off either way you like. What does play with people's minds up here, both trainers and jockeys, I believe, are when they can't get that first win in the meet. So about 3 weeks into the meet, someone will say, they refer to it as being on the duck. You know, someone is still on the duck. So if you have a rider who's had 25 mouths without a win, that can start getting to people's minds too a little bit, I think.
Right.
You know, it's just once you get, as Mike says, once you get that win, you seem to relax a little bit.
It's a big sigh of relief, Gabe. Trust me, it's a big sigh of relief.
Right, I can imagine. All right, thanks, guys.
Well, thank you, Gabe. Thanks for calling in.
Great question, Gabe. We'll see you up there.
Well, speaking of winners, we're going to introduce our guest now, James Bond, who's a winner at Saratoga every year. Let's welcome James on. Hello, James. Welcome to Racetrackers.
Thank you. How are y'all doing?
Well, fine, thanks. We managed to thank you for coming on this this little bit odd time. You know, Mike Monroe, who's my co-host, stayed in New York, but I'm up here in Saratoga. Between traveling and moving around a little bit, we had to change our schedules. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Well, Mike's always a class act, and like I say yourself, it's a pleasure to be on your show, and thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you. We wanted to have you on. You're a return guest, and we had so much fun talking to you the first time, but we wanted to have you on because Saratoga is your time of year. It seems that every year you come up here fully ready to run well and to run a lot of horses, and it seems like this year it doesn't seem to be any different. It seems that you already have two horses in. Are you planning on a big meet?
Well, you always hope, as Mike said, and you keep your fingers crossed. You need that first win, that first bucket, as they say, to kind of smooth things out and get things into tempo. And like I say, you just you never count your chickens before they're hatched, as they say.
Well, it's one of the toughest places to win races, right? I mean, it's clearly the lights are brightest and the lights are shine the brightest and the eyes are on you. We've spoken about this before. You seem to have a number of your horses peak at this time of year. And is that by design or is that part of your training regimen?
Well, the world's watching. I always say at Saratoga, it gets the most press, it gets the best horses, it gets the best riders, jockeys, trainers, owners, everything. I mean, they're all here, and worldwide, like I say, everybody's watching. I mean, believe it or not, the European industry just kind of watches who's running there and what pedigrees are winning and what trainers are winning, and it kind of can set you up for, believe it or not, I believe, the next year, because the horse sales are right after this. And, if you're into the, basically yearling market and developing two-year-olds, it's very important to win races and, especially with young horses, and let them know that you can go back and buy some more and hopefully develop them too.
Well, Mike, we speak about that all the time, right, Mike, about how particularly around sales weeks, everyone – tries to unveil their most impressive baby or their most impressive prospect.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But we got Mr. Bond on, and Jim, you've had a lot of successful meets in Saratoga. Just for the callers, I know you train up there on a steady basis. Is it a big advantage to be training up there ahead of time than shipping up late after the Belmont meet like so many bonds do?
Well, the bottom line is fast horses win races, but in the end, okay, I think it is a little bit of an advantage. We had a really kind of a wet spring. We got through it, but it was kind of tough. I think the amazing thing might be the new surface on this track. I mean, I am, as some people know, just located off the main track. I have my own private facility on a street called Gridley that annexes up to the harness track, so I get to go by the Oklahoma or the main course just about every day, training my horses to go to Oklahoma. And the main track, they've done some real serious work on. They've added a lot of sand, and it's going to be kind of interesting because some of the, right now the jury, basically with the clockers and some of the trainers, is that these horses are kind of coming down the lane a little bit tired, and so it's going to be very a little interesting beginning unless they do something different by post time tomorrow. Because it is a little bit of a tiring course right now, and again, it may not be the old Saratoga, as they say. But in saying all that, we're all going to be running on the same track, so hopefully the best horse wins.
Well, that's a really interesting point that I've been focused on. So thank you for bringing that up. I didn't know how much work they did on it, and just for our listeners, a sandier track and a more tiring track makes it more difficult for horses to get a distance they otherwise would be able to get, right? So you're feeling that you would expect sprinters trying to stretch out would have a more difficult time with a sandier, looser track. And you probably would expect some speed horses to have some difficulty as well if their natural advantage of speed might not hold up. Do you know, Jim, what was behind the desire to redesign the track? Was it just a matter of time, or was it in response to some complaints?
Well, last spring, they opened up last year about a week before, 10 days before the main track, and unfortunately they had, a few horses that didn't come back too good or broke down, and I think that, they heard the rallying cry from the, trainers and the owners that something's got to be done, and I mean they did some serious work, and I mean I've never seen so much money, trucks and sand, and I mean they've done a fantastic job. The Oklahoma training track was done first, and I must tell you, I mean the Oklahoma training track, if you look at the times, you used to work a horse half and 50, well now those horses are working in 48 and change now. I mean so it's a it's totally different, but this track here, I mean it poured the other night. We had a terrible storm. And the next morning, I mean, we were galloping, you know, 6:30, we were on a galloping and having no problem. And I don't think there was a drop of water on the track at 7:30. And you know, we got a serious 1.5-2 inches of rain and, you know, just pounded hard. And like I say, which I'm not sure if that's this is good or bad, but I think it's going to take a lot of water. And I hope they have an extra water truck because it could be a little bit bumpy. So it's going to be interesting.
That's interesting because I'm sorry to interrupt, but over the years, right, Mike, over the years, and Jim, when it rained up here, sometimes the track would just become muddy and gluey and sticky, and it took a while for it to dry out. But that'll be a whole different setup if it can take some rain.
Yeah,
absolutely. Is it similar to the training track that we have now down at Belmont, Jim? That seems to take a lot of rain, and you know, you'd be surprised. Like, you didn't think the next day you'd be training over it, and actually, like you said, horses are breezing on it the next day because it dries out so well.
Exactly. That's ditto. I think it is. They did a segment on, I think it was the NBC channel, about some of the before the Belmont, or a little bit of what they were doing and basically what they do to get the track ready. And they're giving the breakdown of the sand and the silt and what have you and the clay. And I think they almost tried to mirror it up here. And like I say, it's, you know, you might see some horses that previously loved Saratoga. They might not love Saratoga, if you know what I mean. So it's gonna be interesting the first week or so to kind of, you know, on a handicapping point to see. And then the weather's going to, I think, have a lot to do with it. I think we get a lot of rain. I think speed, you know, will come back and hold. But, you know, it might be a little interesting if it gets to be hot and dry. I don't think they can get enough water on this track for a while unless they do something, you know, very miraculous in the next 24 to 48 hours.
Well, you've had tremendous success up there, and I'm sure you'll have another great meet. I mean, you know, Bill, not to be without congratulating. I mean, how about Jim Bond's success at Saratoga, La Carrière, and the Saratoga Cup handicap? Of course, the Travis Stakes with Will's Way, the Dwyer with Barron's, just to name a few. The Whitney with Will's Way. You know, I mean, you just go on in Tis Way, winning the Whitney up there. I mean, you've just had a whole host of success up there, and I don't see any reason why you won't have another great meet, Jim.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I got my fingers crossed, and like I say, you just don't take anything for granted in this game, because, like you say, just when you enter one and you think you're on the turf, you're off the turf, and yep. You know, you draw a post that you really don't like, and or, you know, Chad's got something coming over from Europe that's the next, you know what? So it's, you know, you just don't know. When you pick up that overnight, you're like, oh my gosh, oh, they're dropping that one in at me now, you know, and it just, you know, and you really think, you know, you're doing great, you're training fantastic, and you know, but it's just. It's tough here, and like I say, every win you get here is, you know, really, really special. So, and again, like you say, I mean, I do, you know, kind of, you know, try to work really hard for this meet to make sure everything's, my I's are dotted and my T's are crossed, and hoping that the racing gods, you know, say it's okay to win a race or two, I hope so.
And now, Mr. Bond, Bill, he's got, I think, two of his sons involved in the operation, Kevin and Ryan, correct?
I do. Yeah, I'm very fortunate. It's you know, both boys, their mother is very well educated, and she made sure they both had great college backgrounds. So they both had 4 years, and one's a finance major, and the other one's, I guess, a business major. And I always told them they could come back, but they had to go get some education first, because the game is a very tough game, needless to say. And they just love it. I mean, I tried to kind of push them away for a while, and it just wouldn't be. And you know, they're just it's so fantastic, needless to say, to have your family with you. But it's better to see, they're just great horsemen. They're really going to do well on their own someday. And you know, I'm really proud of them. Kevin had New York Division this winter and did fantastic. Basically, I came back from Florida and screwed it up, he said. He's probably right. and Ryan, he has Florida with me, and he's just a fantastic horseman. He was at the July sales last week and down there doing some scouting for me. And, you know, we're very fortunate. I can't say how great the game has been for me personally. And like I say, any day you get to work with your family, I mean, there are days, needless to say, that, you know, dad's getting stupider, needless to say. But and sometimes he finds things that work, and then they kind of give you, wow, where'd you figure that one out, Dad? You know, but anyway, it is great, and they're both good boys, and they're hard workers, and they, as they say, hard work usually makes a little bit of good luck.
Yeah, I'm glad you really. Yep, I'm glad you really complimented on Kevin, because I braved the winter with him this year, and he really worked hard, and he had you guys had a great aqueduct winter meet. You know, Kevin was out there every morning, and you know, braving the elements, but he kudos to him, Jim. He really has come a long way, and he's a great horseman and a fine young man.
Yeah, mother. It's all the mother. It's the dam on this side. It did all the good.
Yeah, the dam
thank
carries
you.
All
must
the class
be.
Right now.
but you know, Bill, Jim does have a tough job. A lot of those horses run under the name Tina M. Bond. So you know, not only has he got to answer, he's got to answer to Mrs. Bond too if they don't run so well. So now she's got him and the two boys that she can come to if something doesn't go right or wrong. Right, Bill? Jim?
Yeah,
exactly. I actually tell the jocks a lot of times when I'm legging them up and giving them some of the positives and negatives about a horse and what my thoughts are. And I says, but the worst thing is don't make me sleep on the couch tonight, please.
He does say tough. That, though, because he said it to the agents a bunch of times, too.
That's exactly.
Yeah, well, you can put up with people being angry with you at work or at home. It's hard to tolerate having people angry at you at both, right? So you don't want to be...
We're very fortunate. We, like I say, it is a team, and like I say, we're all just excited to get up every morning and play this game. And you know, there's unfortunately heartaches, and there's a lot of them that can't run. We breed a lot, as most people know, in New York, and you know, you see them growing up, and you think they're something, and then you open the gate in the afternoon, and you realize they just don't have any heart. You know, and it's sad, but it's reality.
Yeah, I guess one of the.
Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
I know, Jim. I was just going to say. I guess one of the different things about this Saratoga, you know, will be remiss if we didn't say, will be unfortunately we lost our good friend Glenn DeSanto, and you know, I was very close to Glenn. I rode a lot of horses for him with the jockeys I've had throughout the years, and won a few races for him. And he was just one of the best people that I knew in Saratoga, and look forward to working with day in and day out. But I know you picked up a lot of the owners and most of the horses, so you know, that's another great thing. I hope you win for those people that did have horses with Glenn in the past and are now with you. You know, like I said, he was one of the nicest guys I ever met on the racetrack, and always had a smile.
Yeah, you was just he just made the day a better day when you got to see Glenn. He just never said a word about himself. He was always just kudos to everybody else, and just one of the kindest gentlemen I've ever met, and you know, just didn't get the opportunities that a lot of us have had. And he's just his wife actually came to the barn today for the first time to see some of her old friends and what have you, and it was nice to see. And like I say, his birthday is going to be remembered on Whitney Day, actually, and they're having a little thing, I believe, in the winter circle for him. And like I say, you know, he's very sadly missed around the barn areas, because he just made the racetrack just a better place for all of us. And like I say, he just couldn't say enough nice things about the man. He's just, you know, and Kevin actually and Glenn got to be really good friends the last few months of his life. And him and Kevin kind of worked together, and you know, it was just great. And like I said, the owners that were with him are just the nicest people in the world. They're really just good, fine people. And hopefully we have a couple of horses to run for him, and they're doing pretty good. And I just hope Glenn's looking down and gives him a break and helps Kevin and I and Ryan do the right thing by these horses to get him over the finish line for the whole team for him.
Nah, that's great.
Well, you know, there's a lot to be said for that type of thing, you know, and you spoke about your sons working with you. I had the great honor of being the eldest of my family. I had the great honor of working with my father, and my siblings didn't get that opportunity. And you know your parents on a different level when you work with them. It strengthens it. But, you know, when I lost him, you struggle with, do you come back to Saratoga? And you know, can you really kind of face it? As you said, you know, Glenn DeSanto's wife coming by the barn, it must be painful. But it's a timeless place, Saratoga is, and it's you know, the earlier generations continued on when they lost loved ones, and so we do too. And I know every year when we come up here, it's another year when you mark friends who you've lost, and you know, friends who you've made. God knows how many friends we've made up here over the years, right, Mike? It's a place where friends are made easily. But but it is. It's a changing of the guard, but you continue on to see them. So that must be a nice feeling for her that those horses are on your hands. That's great. You know, it's
She's a very, very, very nice lady. And like I say, she's had a lot of sour, needless to say, in her poor life lately. And hopefully, like I say, we can win a couple races with some of these, because they were the breeders on a couple of them too, which, you know, would be really, really nice in honor of Glenn and what have you. So we're going to do our best, and hopefully, like I say, the racing gods give us a little bit of a break.
Yeah, cool. We'll make a point of bringing that up again on as we get closer to Whitney on the show here. Jim, we're proud enough to have a race named after us. Our show here, Race Trackers, is going to be the 8th race on Saturday is named after us. One of our listeners was generous enough to sponsor that race in our honor, which is kind of nice. And I laughed a little bit because I'm bringing up a light pink sports jacket. And my wife brought out the bright blue sports jacket that was your calling card all of the years. Has that jacket been retired, or will that come back for
no,
more?
No, it's still here, and you may see it once or twice during the meet. So, like I say, it's here. The missus actually does all my shopping because I'm a little too busy, and so she bought me some new sports jackets this year. So I don't know if they're going to be lucky or not, but if they're not, you won't see them again.
Jimmy, I want to touch on a little different topic, and it's. I pretty much know what you're going to say, so it's kind of a leading question. But we talked about how tiring this track, this new track may be, and people have spoken how Delaware is a tiring racetrack. And we just saw Songbird go a mile and a quarter on that racetrack. And the way people responded to her margin of victory, you would have thought that she was eased. I mean, do you, as a horseman, do you find it disheartening sometimes when fans are so critical of efforts, including a winning one?
Well, it's kind of interesting because in this country, I mean, everybody looks at time. Okay, just, you know, Bond Racing actually is a partnership. At, you know, we own the majority of the horse, but there's a lot of partners in a lot of these. But you'll have people that, you know, if a horse has run a couple of times, then they'll look at a horse's time and they say, oh my God, well, he only ran a mile in 41 or 40 and change or something like that. Well, that might have been on the Innerits aqueduct in a plowed field. I mean, everything's relative, as we all know. And in Europe, I mean, time is irrelevant. I mean, they don't even talk about time in Europe, as we know. But like I say, you get over here, and that's, you know, what it is. And it's the horses you beat, and it's how you beat them. And, you know, when you're kind of gearing up, in my belief, a trainer, you know, like Hollendorfer and Baffert and all the greats, I call them, I mean, you know, they're getting these horses ready. These horses aren't cranked at 100%. I mean, they're at the beginning of their year. And, you know, I mean, you take shots and handicaps, and, you know, that's what it's all about. And, you know, trying to, you know, get horses a little closer so that you don't have a total walkover all the time. And so, you know, I wouldn't take a whole lot away from that. You know, she maybe struggled. Maybe she did have a bad day. I mean, you know, I was listening to Mike earlier, and, you know, Mike is so right. I mean, you think about a jockey, okay, riding 7-8 horses a day, and someone told me this, you know, I don't know how many years ago, but he gets on a horse, it's 2-5 in the first race, horse stumbles, goes on his nose leaving the gate, and doesn't get there, just, you know, runs third, blah, 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 blah. Trainer's upset, rider's upset, and everybody's mad, okay? Next race, he's got new owner, new trainer, got a smile, walk into the paddock, you know, man, he gets slaughtered, okay? And it just goes on and on. And then finally he wins one for the day. But, you know, you think of the mental pressure, okay, that a rider has, okay? And then, you know, trainers are the same way. Well, horses, why shouldn't they have their days? And we all know they do. I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, we all get up, you know, kind of some every once in a while in the morning, and things just don't work the way you like. You didn't sleep as good. Maybe the, you know, the exercise rider let him gallop a little too fast that morning. You know, maybe the fan was on him too close that night and he's got a stiff neck and we, you know, no, they can't talk to us. And, you know, just so many millions of little things that, you know, it's just sometimes out of everyone's control. And it's just crazy. I don't know. I think the filly's a great filly. She won. And that's the bottom line. Good horses overcome things. And whether they win by a nose or they win by 10, sometimes, you know, you just got to take it as just a nice horse. He knows how to get there. And, you know, that's what I kind of look at horses at personally. And, you know, and like I say, she just didn't like the racetrack that day.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, in general, I think that and you can tell by us having this show, which there's no real need for this show other than the fact that people like it. I think in general, any discussion about horse racing is good, you know, because other sports for so many years had people debating small nuances of every possible sport on the radio and on TV and, you know, in barbershops, and racing didn't have all that. So I'm glad we have it. I do get a little disgusted sometimes at how critical people can be of things, because it's so difficult to win a race. And I guess as you said, you know, Jerry Hollendorfer has a long year to go with this horse, and they wanted to win this race, so they probably rushed to get there a little bit. This was a race that was important to the owner of Fox Hill Farms, and he said as much. I'm sure, you know, it wasn't optimum to ship across the country to run that race, and I thought it was actually an okay effort. But in any event, I just really wanted to get your thought on the tiring tracks, because we may see that now with Saratoga being as sandy as it now is. You may see some efforts that appear from a time standpoint to be somewhat lackluster.
Exactly. It's very well possible. And again, I mean, I've seen horses over the years. I used to have some horses, a horse named Devious Course years ago. I won the Nashua with him, beat a horse by the name of Thunder Gulch. He got beat a whisker in the 3-year-old prep, the 7/8 prep at Gulfstream. The horse loved Gulfstream. The horse loved Saratoga, and he loved the outer at Aqueduct. And I mean, loved it. Just had infinity for those race courses. Belmont, you couldn't find him with a search warrant, okay? I'm telling you, he just hated it, okay?
And he did win the Cigar Mile, too, right, Jeff?
He won the Cigar Mile for me, too. Yeah, it was the first Grade 1 winner for actually the Stallion, Crafty Prospector, at that time.
God, I remember the race. It was yesterday. He came barreling through a hole in mid-stretch and just drew off to a victory. As if I was watching it now, I remember him.
Yeah, but he just had an affinity for those three racetracks, and I was lucky enough to realize it, and I just wouldn't run him at Belmont anymore, you know, put him away and just freshen him for the Aqueduct Outer, and, you know, took him to Gulfstream and run him there in the wintertime, and, you know, he was just a nice, honest little horse. And but saying that is, you know, so you very well could see some change, but it was just interesting talking to the clockers this morning of, you know, because a few of them that I really respect, and you know, the saying was the same way, and you know that even the 7/8 shoot's rather deep. I mean, I'm hoping they do a little something with the 7/8 shoot, because it's very deep in there, and I'm worried some horses are going to go on their nose, you know, kind of leaving there. I think they might have to tweak it just a little bit, I hope, and maybe Mother Nature will take care of it for all of us. She usually does. So.
Well, I mean, I guess from a handicapping angle, that's our show is kind of half and half between people who like the race, the racing for the sport of it and for the personalities, and others who like to bet it, and some of course who like both. But for the handicappers, I guess a horse for course has always been an angle up at Saratoga, because horses tend to repeat up here. They tend to win year after year up here, and I've always thought that was a combination of the connections wanting to aim for the same type of race they had the year before, but also a horse's affinity for the particular surface. So I guess this year we have to take that into account, that it's probably less likely that you'll have a horse for course, because it is a different course.
Well, you'll see, okay, I mean, probably tomorrow with a pan shot, and what they've done is they've taken the lip off the inside of the track, and they've actually dug in between the turf course, outer turf, and the dirt course, and they've dug it down really deep, okay? They probably, I'm going to say, took 2.5 feet out of there. So, I mean, and they've actually, the crown's out a little bit more. And to me, okay, I mean, the water just runs off quick, okay? And they built it up with actually new sod. So you've got about 2 inches of sod just inside the inside rail. And it's pretty interesting. I mean, in all reality. But again, I mean, I was just amazed with the amount of rain we got. And you know, I have basically a jog area in my private barn, and I can almost tell what the tracks are going to be like looking at that. And I couldn't believe. I mean, my first set is 5:30 sharp every day, and I'm thinking, well, we're jogging today. I mean, we were galloping second set with not a problem, and carried on, and I could have worked horses without a problem on the 8:30 break. So on the main course, which is, you know, again, unheard of.
Well, you highlight again how early the game this is for the trainers. We had the pleasure of having Mike Hushin on last week, and one of the questions we asked him was whether or not he would see that now that he's retired, whether he'd sleep later. And he said, yeah, he might sleep a little bit later, but old habits are hard to break. Your day starts at 5:30 in the barn, or do you get there even earlier?
Myself, I'm a little bit early riser. I have a horse farm that's about 15 minutes from there, so I actually kind of creep down from my hill to through the farm. Just that we feed at 4 a.m. at the farm, and so I come through about 4:15, and one of my managers always knows that he can get a hold of me if there's an emergency on the farm before I leave for the track. So I like to be at the barns a little after 4, and you know, my assistants and grooms kick in there around 4:30, 5 o'clock. You know, our first set, because of our location, I do a lot of Oklahoma training still. And so my first set leaves the barn at 10 after 5 to walk over to Oklahoma just about every morning.
Well, that's
so,
doctors say that.
I can vouch for that, Bill. I've seen him many a time at 5:15 on the Oklahoma track.
Yeah, you know, well, Mike's there with me. You know, and Lucas used to say, "You're the only guy that can beat me to the track in the morning," and there's not that many people that beat Wayne. But like I said,
during the Saratoga meet, Jim, you might see me at those hours, but it may be coming in from the other direction.
I understand. Well, like I say, just don't run over my horses on the way home.
Only up here do I stay out late. Sometimes we stay out late and get to the barn anyway. Jim, I think this is great. I always enjoy speaking to you, and our listeners always enjoy it. And I know you have such a great bunch of owners, and you've been with them for so long, and you've. You breed your own horses, and you're a consummate horseman, and we're just so happy to have you on here. And you know, we predicted a big meet for you for Saratoga. So in addition to having to worry about your owners and about your wife, you have to worry about us now, because we've gone out on a limb for you to predict a big, meet.
You'll never have me back on again if I don't win a few races. I know, so I better.
I don't think we're going to have that problem, Mike. I'm sure you got plenty of bullets to fire up there, boss. And I know you're a hard worker, and you'll have another great meet.
I sure appreciate it. And thank you for having me on. I look forward to seeing Mike usually on a daily basis, and Bill, I'll see you when you're right behind me, hopefully. And again, I sure do appreciate you. I'll wishing us luck, and like I say, we'll do our best to make everybody look good.
Yeah,
no,
not just saying it because he's on, but he's also one of my favorite people on the racetrack. Always goes out of his way to say hello to me, as I do him, and we've had some success together with some of the riders I've had throughout the year. But he's always given me a shot, and I've always volunteered anytime I can help him out in the morning. And he's always welcomed me in his barn, and he's a great guy. And like I said, Jim, I'm always rooting for you.
Mike, we know how much patience he has, because Jim's box is right in front of our seats at Saratoga, and so he tolerates Pete and that whole cast of characters plugging in their phones in his box, and we have 12 people sitting in 4 seats, and it's a live group.
Yes, but we were also one of the first people to congratulate him the day he won the Travers with Will's Way.
That's exactly. That's right. Exactly. Yeah.
I got a big tap on the shoulders and a big high five the day he won. I'll never forget it. And I was so happy for him.
It was a special day. One of the more special days in my life. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And hopefully you'll have many trips down the stairs to the winner's circle this year, boss.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate that.
Good.
Well.
Well, James Bond, everyone. We'll let you go. Thanks, Jim. And we'll stop by the barn some morning. I'd love to see it. So we'll make a point of coming down and see you some morning.
Please do, and bring Mike with you.
Okay, we'll do.
I'll leave my condition in the car, I promise.
Have a great day, and have a great Saratoga to everybody out there.
See you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Take care.
But James Bond, everyone.
Class act, Bill. Class act.
Oh, of course. Yeah, he's great. You know, we sit behind him at the track, we're always rooting hard for various horses, and you know how it is. It's throughout the day, a million people come up to say hello to you, and we're always kind of getting in his way, and he's always completely gracious, and you know, we've become friends, you know, from that. So that's great. Really interesting information on the changing of the consistency of the track. I had not focused on that, and our listeners probably should, because that's going to make a huge difference.
Oh, absolutely. I know that they had done a lot of work on it, but like I said to you, that Belmont training track here, if it's equivalent to the Saratoga, trust me, I was amazed with some of the rain we had and some of the bad weather we had, and the next day they were training over it. Amazing.
Right, right. Now, I didn't quite 100% grasp what Jim was saying about banking or digging out some areas. I hope they haven't done like they did a few years ago, maybe 10 years ago now, where they changed the turf course to the point where they banked it to the point where it actually blocks the main course from the grandstand when they turn for home. I mean, that you still have some blocked sight lines now when they reach a little bit outside the quarter pole. And I always thought that was a bit of a mistake. But I don't really know. We'll have to see whether it changes the sight lines or not.
Absolutely. And he also mentioned about, you know, the turf courses, you know, with the sod on the inside. Who knows how that's going to play out, if it's going to be speed favoring coming from behind, depending on the heat, you know, how hot it gets up there, because we all know the Saratoga can have some brutally hot days up there, and that turf could be rock hard.
Well, it's always a lot of fun. I'm up here today. I'm going to go to that fundraiser over at Ciro's tonight, which is great. So if anybody is listening and listening to the show, want to come over and say hello, we'll all be there. We'll be out at the races tomorrow. And of course, we're going to have our big thing on Saturday. So I'm going to post this. This is a little early show. So Mike, we'll post this around, and hopefully some of our listeners who normally listen at 8 o'clock will listen to the replay at 8. But I think we may have covered everything we need to cover tonight. Is there anything that we missed?
I think we're just going to start the racetracker fans off with a winner on opening day. The fourth race, I believe it's number two or number three, if you got the in front of you, Bill, is Pattern Recognition from the powerful Chad Brown stable.
Okay, hold on. Let me make sure we have it up here. So that's on opening day, which is tomorrow. And the fourth race?
Fourth race, Pattern Recognition.
So this is on Friday, not on Saturday. So we got to make sure everybody goes that. You don't want to find out you missed it. So the fourth race, Saratoga, Saturday, July 21st. And it is
Friday.
Friday, right. So that's tomorrow, right? So.
Yep.
And it's Pattern Recognition number 3. Chad Brown,
yes.
and Javier Castellano. Okay.
Yep.
So
that's going to spot everyone off at racetrackers with a winner.
Excellent. So get off the duck right away, right? The opening day. Perfect.
There you go.
All right. Good. With that, anything else or anything we forgot? I'm sure there's something we should have talked about, but it's a lot of moving around. And Mike, you weren't feeling 100%, and I was traveling, so it's a little truncated show tonight. But we're so happy to have James Bond. That's great. And, you know, thanks to him, and thanks to you, and thanks to our friend Gabe for calling in. And
absolutely.
Let's enjoy the pleasure that is Saratoga.
We'll speak over the weekend, Bill, and best of luck to you guys up there.
Thank you. Good night, everyone. We're going to play the song, and we'll speak to everybody next week. Thanks, all.
Good night, everyone.